Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin will be back with us next week. So he'll be able to give us some insights and also be part of our special lineup next week. I know we have a guest next week as well. And so I want you to be excited about the return of Justin and our special guest for next week. In the meantime, we have a special guest this week, one that is near and dear to my heart, but also a very close friend and colleague. And we have with us again with the pilot and co-pilot in many ways of Federal Prison Authority, Mr. Jose Santana. Jose, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Bruce, for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's Federal Prison Authority, you know, is a great little consulting firm that does federal prison consulting for attorneys and defendants and inmates and families, and so much going on now with federal prison reform. And in prior shows, you and I have talked about the First Step Act and where things were with it, and now things are starting to heat up. Things are starting to get just a little bit more real. So we want to talk about where things are now here in January of 2020, and these things are starting to come to pass. They're starting to become just a little bit more real. And I know we'll go in several directions, but this past Friday, as you noted on the BOP.gov website and First Step Act updates, part of those updates was a list of programs and meaningful activities that, if successfully completed, the inmate can receive the transitional credits, we might say, for more halfway house or home confinement. And so, as you can imagine, right, First Step Act Federal Prison Reform Facebook group, now between 700 and 800 members, is lighting up, right? People are starting to pack their bags again, and this is creating quite a buzz, Jose, this list of programs that can result in credits. But
absolutely.
But hey, it's a good thing, right? Because as you and I know, a lot of these programs that they have on this list, this four pages of programs, but that's a lot of the same old stuff, isn't it? Go ahead.
You and I know that you know that it's just being published now. It's given, you know. And Bruce, let's take a step back. You know, the Bureau is moving in the right direction. I think the Bureau, as an agency of the executive branch, has been giving now the tools and law in the right direction to give these programs that we had previously when you and I worked in the federal prisons. These programs existed back then, 20-some years ago, and inmates took them. Inmates completed them, but they weren't getting credit for early community releases. This is part of what we call, you know, giving teeth to those programs so they could have the desired effect of reentry. you know. So I think it's the right direction. The government is moving in the right direction because we can't warehouse inmates anymore, you know. We can't just put right. away people, lock them up, and throw away the key. Because they're going to return to be somebody's neighbor, you know. So this is the right thing to do. And, you know, I got to give kudos to the Bureau of Prisons because the Bureau of Prisons has been proactive in putting those and complied with putting the guidance out there. You know, as of Friday, we talked about this, Bruce. We exchanged emails on this list of programs as to what the risk assessment and the evidence-based to reduce recidivism program list and the productive activity list that the Bureau put out on Friday. It's a great thing because now you have in clear black and white where these programs are, how much time they're going to last, what are the credits that the inmates are going to get given, and the locations, you know, of the places. So I think it's excellent, you know. And you put it out there, Bruce, to the attorneys, you know,
right.
to the national defense attorneys and to the Texas criminal defense lawyers and to the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. So that's a great thing.
Yes, I put that list of programs out to those respective agencies, the Texas Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, as well as the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, where I'm a member of both of those groups as an expert witness and affiliate member and whatnot. So it gave me direct access to their listserv, and we disseminated that information to those folks, which this will be highly helpful to their federal clients as they enter federal prison, and particularly those federal clients that do not qualify for the residential drug abuse treatment program and its subsequent year off the sentence, that then this will be the main method by which all federal inmates will receive some sort of benefits, even if the person is a sex offender or a gang member or violent. They can still program with these activities and receive what, more phone credits? What else can the violent folks get, Jose, for programming?
Well, they could get more phone credits. They could get more time to use the commissary, extended visiting. You know, it doesn't have to be only on holidays like Christmas and Father's and Mother's Day, things like that. They could get more more commissary funds, you know, to be allotted in their commissary accounts and things of that nature. Expanded visiting also, more visiting time.
So that's good. So that way it doesn't discriminate solely on risk status, even though risk status is what drives the equation for the transitional credits being of low risk to the community. And that's one of the things that I you know, you and I are going to continue to develop this program and this service line, is, you know, the ability to help families and inmates navigate through the First Step Act, because there'll be you know, every inmate on section one of the central file will have a First Step Act kind of cover sheet with credits and whatnot. And then on subsequent teams and reviews, that'll impact and program completions, that'll impact how many days, quote, quote, of credit, quote, quote, an inmate can earn. One of the questions we've been getting, Jose, is, hey, is this stuff retroactive? You know, my loved one took this and that class. He's been down for, you know, 10, 15 years, and he's taken all these classes. Half of them are on the lift.
Right.
Right. Can my loved one get taken,
and he's taken it while he's been on pretrial status right now. He hasn't been sentenced yet, and he just got sentenced. He's going to be sentenced this week. So, you know, unfortunately, the law says that it's not retroactive. The First Step Act time credits are not retroactive. It's based on the date the law establishes, which is that January 15, 2020 date And based on those programs that just came out on the list on Friday, Bruce, that we put out. So that's when it starts ticking. Those programs, the First Step Act time credits will be given to inmates who participate in the evidence-based reducing recidivism programs and the productive activity program listed on the 6 pages that were just put out. After January 15th. So it's not when the inmate was in pretrial status last month or prior to that January 15, 2020 release date. But you know, Bruce, every law has its general rules, and that's the general rule applied there. I don't know if that's going to change down the road, because this is the First Step Act. Remember, second step might be given to those inmates who were lifers and were enhanced and now received a reduced sentence because of the safety valve application and the Armed Career Criminal Act. Those that were enhanced may have a sentence reduction, are not lifers anymore, and maybe it applies to those. Who knows? Down the road, the law will change, and First Step Act Phase 2 would give them credit. So, and then the Bureau has a lot of flexibility on applying and implementing this new law. But I don't think right now they will be able to give them, even if the Bureau wanted to give this inmate that had complied with programs previously the credits, because it specifically says it's not retroactive.
It's not retroactive, but there is hope. If you do have a loved one that's coming out of prison, federal prison in 20 or 21 or early 22, there's still some wiggle room for more possible home confinement and residential reentry center time under the Second Chance Act. And folks can get a hold of us at federalprisonauthority.com for more information on that, because really it's already 2020 in the beginning phases. Not everybody's gotten the pattern, and really, honestly, not much is going to happen with this in terms of, I don't think, in terms of case managers figuring out these things, putting them on the BP-210 until 2022. You know, I know that was a date that was thrown out there that a lot of these provisions will be in full swing. So, but it is a good and encouraging start. Now, the pattern risk assessment, has that gone public yet, or they're still working on the tool and getting that out to the public?
Well, pattern is still under revision. I think it's gotten to the public already, and inmates have given it out to their loved ones, put it out there. There have been some revisions, Bruce. There's a lot of controversy, and actually I think, I'm not giving here any paid promotion to the Bureau of Prisons. I think the Bureau of Prisons and the Department of Justice are trying genuinely to have a good tool for predictability of recidivism. And I think the pattern has retained with the changes that have been made as to the definitions of violence and what is recidivism and what is conduct to recidivate. I think they have made genuine changes to the pattern, and it's been said that it has a high level of predictability across the inmates, across genders, both for male and female inmates, Bruce. The thing here is the definitions of clarifying that they clarify the definition of general and violent recidivism in the pattern, kind of to give it a little bit more transparency. They clarified what general and violent recidivism because it generated a little bit of confusion there, those terms. And they went to, the pattern was tweaked into that and modified to better predict what they meant by general and violent and general recidivism and violent recidivism, you know.
Right.
But, you know, Bruce, one of the things that we get all the time, one of the questions, as you very well know, is does this apply to non-U.S. citizens?
Exactly.
So those individuals that are classified as what the Bureau classifies as alien, non-U.S. citizens, those that are going to be subject to review under the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, better known AKA as ICE, ICE will have to review and determine if those individuals are going to be deported or not. If those inmates that are non-U.S. citizens are not going to be deported, so then they have a chance to have the benefits of the First Step Act.
Okay. But what? Okay, so let's say there's somebody out there at D. Ray James or Dalby or whatever, Big Spring, private prison. Well, what? And they decide not to deport. What? How will that help them? What will they be able to get?
Well, they'd be able to get, if they're eligible and they still have the time, to go to the RDAP and get up to the year off of the 3621E release and get the 6 months of halfway house, possibly, or get halfway house. If they're eligible to go to the halfway house, they should be transferred to a mainland institution, you know, a regular general population institution of the Bureau of Prisons. From that contract site, they qualify then for the benefits of being reviewed for the pattern for risk assessment, even though they will be reviewed at the private facility. They will go through the revision at the private facility also, because ICE hasn't reviewed their case. Now, if they're ordered to be deported, if they have a deportation order, that's end of discussion. End of the game for the FSA. But if they're subject to deportation, they haven't been reviewed, they will go through the risk assessment review for pattern, and then if ICE determines that they're not going to be deported, then they could have the benefits of the First Step Act time credit.
Wouldn't they have to ask be okay, right, but wouldn't they have to transfer to a main institution to get that?
Right, they should be. Because now they are sent to the private facilities. Those inmates that are non-U.S. citizens are sent to the private facilities for the purpose of being reviewed by ICE to expedite that.
Okay. So how much time would they have to have left on their bit to go back into a mainline institution once ICE determines they're not going to deport?
The general rule is any inmate that falls into the low security category without a management variable and has about 90 months or less to serve, non-U.S. citizen should be reviewed by ICE. And that determination is made at initial designation. The DSEC has a liaison officer in central office from ICE that works very closely with us. Actually, that was one of the things that I implemented together with one of my suggestions, to have somebody expedite those cases at the beginning of the initial designation process. We were able to get that individual from ICE located in central office and BOP headquarters. And those individuals review the case before designation, and they tell us, yes, this inmates will have to be reviewed by ICE. So send them to ICE Immigration Hearing Program Institution, which could be a Bureau facility, or it could be, most of the time, if they're 90 months or less, low security, pure low security, classified as low security inmate, they will go to a contract private site.
Right. But let's say they go to the contract private site, and then immigration decides not to deport them. How do they get back to a mainline joint?
So the unit team there, they have a unit team there, they have a case manager, they have at the private sites, they have a case management coordinator. They should be reviewing those cases, or the inmate could request it. The inmate could file a what's called a staff inmate to staff request, cop out, called the cop out, and request to be transferred to the Bureau.
I'm just kind of curious, like, you'd have to have some sort of minimum time left on the end of your bit. You know, you couldn't be 6 months short and just ride it out. You know, you'd have to have at least a couple of years or more.
But at least if, you know, usually ICE is pretty good in determining if the inmate is going to be deported within the first few years there. If the inmate has 90 months or less, I mean, that's almost 8 years, you know?
Right.
8 years that inmate's going to be there, but I mean, they will look at them as soon as they have them scheduled within the time frames. Remember, there's few limited resources for that type of work, and there's thousands of inmates out there. The private, when I left, had about 18,000 inmates.
We were working with a case, I don't know if you ever checked, remember that lady? And she I don't know if she was at Bryan, or I don't think she was at a private, remember? Anyway, family was near Del Rio or whatever. I don't think they deported her, right?
Yeah. I do remember. She was released. She was at Aliceville. She went to Aliceville.
That's right. She went to Aliceville. Right.
Aliceville is an IHP site for females. So that's why she was sent there. And the curious thing about it is she was a permanent resident alien, Bruce. First-time offender. On a conspiracy minor role, and she was sent to be reviewed by ICE. And so she finished her sentence, and she went from there to the Executive Office of Immigration Review in Oakdale. They sent her for ICE court after she finished her sentence. Ultimately, I don't know if she was deported or not, but I'm going to follow up on that case because we were working with the Mexican consulate on that case to see what happened. What would happen, you know? The Mexican consulate was heavily involved trying to help this lady because she was sick. And we tried to help her every way we could, but I didn't want to see her before she left. You know, before she finished her sentence.
Oh, wow. And the ICE court is in Oakdale?
There's an Executive Office of Immigration Review, yes, for male and females. And actually, it's close to FCI Oakdale. It's across the street from that joint, yeah.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, I know we don't want to burn up the whole show on non-U.S. citizen issues, but I mean, let's face it. I mean, non-U.S. citizens are a fairly sizable segment of the federal inmate population, like it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, there's, I guess we should talk about it a little more. I mean, and you have spoke of some new directives from Kathleen Hawksawyer and others to really, some of the assistants, right, to make sure that there's a lot of attention being paid, I guess, to aliens and their designation and where they're housed in these private facilities. So,
correct.
Yeah. But anyhow. So that's for another day. So yes. So everybody is starting to pack their bags and they're starting to calculate how many days per review and what they're going to rack up. But man, if you look at these programs, Jose, I mean, some of these programs, you've got to be in there for a while, right? To get the credit.
Oh yes. If you look at some of those programs, Bruce, like you very well say, they are labeled correctly. Meaningful, productive activity, evidence-based recidivism reduction program. You know, for instance, there is a program for National Parenting from Prison program. It's a program focused on family engagement and parenting skills for inmates. It's for male and female inmates, for both. It's a family oriented for those that, you know, that have been in prison and for a while, that have, you know, kind of delegated their parenting because of the obvious reasons they're incarcerated. So it's a 40-hour program, but you could only have 2 hours per week. So it will take at least a month, an inmate, to complete that program.
Right. The BRAVE program for young first offend, you know, violent males, 6 months program, mm-hmm. and 20 hours a week, you know, 500 hours.
500-hour program.
Yeah, so if you're at Beckley or Victorville Medium, and you can participate in the BRAVE program. Challenge program. This is a cognitive behavioral treatment for high security males that also have a substance use and mental psychiatric diagnosis. A minimum of 9 months at 20 hours per week. And that's a lot
of time. Let's talk about that program, Bruce. Let's talk about that program for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in the Bureau
of Boom.
On last duty station at the DSEC, we implemented some of those programs. That's like a residential drug abuse program, but for mentally ill. It's like dual diagnosis program, but in high security penitentiaries.
Right.
It's what substituted kind of the CODE program, the challenge program, kind of for high security offenders with a kind of dual diagnosis. So.
Exactly. So, yeah, I remember when those programs came online, so here's let's go ahead and get the elephant in the living room. Residential drug program, okay? The RDAP, the almighty RDAP, okay? 9 months, 20 hours a week, 500 hours at 88 locations. Now, this is listed as a meaningful activity, obviously, Jose. So obviously somebody's got to get something coming. The problem is a lot of these guys thinking they're going to be able to double dip if they get the time cut, and are they going to be able to earn some extra home confinement credit on top of the 3621E release law provisions? And what's your thought on that?
So is there anywhere where that's written? Because I haven't seen it yet. I've read the First Step Act numerous times. I've read what the Bureau has put out. I read this new update that the Bureau put out on Friday, January 17th. I read this list of programs, as you very well mentioned, Bruce, and there's nowhere that it says that any inmate, male or female inmate, which this applies to, RDAP is for both male and female inmates, that they will get anybody who completes satisfactory completion of the RDAP program would get up to a year off their sentence, correct? And then they'll have to do 6 months of halfway house on a transitional community drug program to finish RDAP. So it's to be determined yet if the Bureau will give First Step Act time credit to those who complete the RDAP.
Right.
There is no double dipping, as we would say, for the First Step Act and the RDAP benefits. I have not seen that. I have asked that question to my former colleagues, folks that work with me and for me when I was in the Bureau, and they're silent. They said that has not been determined yet. So I would stay tuned, because that's something that the Bureau is going to have to come out and talk about here in the future, and the DOJ is going to have to make a ruling on that. Because there are inmates. I mean, after you complete the RDAP program, you should be getting ready to release to a halfway house, right? Most likely.
Absolutely.
That is the goal. So I don't think that's the 500-hour residential drug abuse treatment program is an intensive program. It requires the inmates' time during the day, and when they're off, they have activities for wellness, to complete assignments in the unit, and they're residing in a RDAP unit. That's the exclusive thing. So there's not any other programs but focus on the RDAP. So they won't have much time to complete other programs. So, I mean, if they do, they're super, super interested in getting out to civilian life quick, you know. But right now, there has been no ruling, no determination as to First Step Act time credits being given to those who are participating in the RDAP or who have completed the RDAP, because they get the most benefits.
Right. Now, you know, here's one for the sex offenders, the sexual self-regulation, the SSR program, 3 to 6 months, 100 hours. So, again, sex offender public safety factor usually precludes someone from receiving, right, traditional First Step Act benefits.
Correct. Correct.
Public safety. But yet, I mean, it's on the list, so they must get, like, again, it doesn't mean they're not going to get any transitional credits, but they can get phone credits, visitation credits, etc.
Well, again, we go back to what we started our conversation as to the Bureau having these programs prior to the First Step Act, Bruce. As you very well know, you were one of the pioneers with the Sex Offender Treatment Program, and when you were in the Bureau, sex offender yes. treatment, sex offender right. management programs. Now, those inmates that complete those programs, and keep in mind, that's a 500-hour program. That's, it takes about the same time of the RDAP program. The only thing, the sex offender doesn't get the year off and up to 6 months of halfway house, because they're going to be reviewed individually.
Right.
And yeah. also, keep in mind, before that inmate is released, those sex offenders that are classified as sex offenders, which take this 500-hour sex offender treatment program, they have to go through a Walsh review, which is based on the John Walsh Act.
Adam Walsh. Yeah.
The Adam Walsh. Adam Walsh.
John Walsh is the TV guy.
John is the father. Yeah, Adam. There you go, Adam baby. Walsh. Act. So the Adam Walsh Act requires that the Bureau reviews an inmate to determine if they're going to be civilly committed. And I explain myself. Civilly committed would mean that after the inmate completes the federal sentence, if they're going to have to remain incarcerated in a sex offender in a psych ward because their propensity to continue their sex offenses and the public safety is at risk. So that's based on the Walsh Act. So usually it's at the end of the sentence. So this sex offender treatment program, the First Step Act will give them time credit, but it's subject to those revisions.
Right. Right. You got to be under review. And certainly those with high static, and I can attest to that, you know, doing some of these Walsh reviews myself and whatnot, that they have to be, you know, like you said, there has to be risk to the community, or what would be the risk to the community. But you and I, Jose, had an inmate who was, what, 83, 84 years old, had a download career of child abuse images for 2 days. And then,
yes.
right. This guy is about as low risk as you could even imagine. And
low risk. Yes.
And so this is a guy who would really benefit from, you know, had he done some programming, and it was all this little fellow could do to stay alive through his bit. God love him. But he made it.
He made it, and we were able to work with him, and he got halfway house. He got halfway house. And actually, we worked with this individual, Bruce. Remember, he was very, very sick.
Oh,
we got him to. We got him to a federal medical center once he was, you know, stabilized in his conditions. And remember, he was very elderly. Yeah. And he was very fragile in health. was taken to the community hospital, and then he was stabilized inside the Federal Medical Center, and we were able to get him to a very low, to a very good general population, low security facility for the reentry programming purposes, and successfully guide him to halfway house.
Yeah. Such a sad case. And in a way, you were still working for the Bureau. I did the initial risk assessment, the psych eval, everything on the front of this thing before he went to trial or court for his sentencing. We pulled all the stops out for a downward departure from the guidelines. He had a crap load of images, unfortunately, right? Which put him in a guideline range, and we just tried so hard to get a downward departure. We got the low end of the guidelines, but yet, you know, we really tried to articulate at the time of sentencing that it wasn't in the BOP's best interest to have this guy with his health condition the way it was on a longer sentence, because it was just going to, we would, in effect, we were being bad stewards of the public trust. I thought it was, in this case, I feel sure. What do you think? You think close to $1 million was spent on his outside medical? All said and done.
If close to that, amount, Bruce.
Yeah,
he was very, very sick. Very sick. Plus, yeah, he was very, up in age also.
Yeah, yeah.
Which complicated the situation.
A special placement, special bed, special joint, and then the special joint couldn't handle his issues. Had to send him out to outside medical multiple times on outside medical trips. Right. Yeah. And the guy, they patch him together, bring him back in. The guy would fail, patch him together, bring him back in, like a cabbage, a Raggedy Ann doll, right? And like, man, this all, you know, we saw this coming. This all could have been averted. But justice is blind sometimes here, my friend. But anyway, but we're glad to know that he's out and surrounded.
Yeah, that
by
was
family.
A good. I think, Bruce, that was a good case for justice to be served on a diversion program, you know, and let's not diminish the seriousness of what he did. I mean, let's be honest.
We're not.
And even if he wanted to recidivate, he couldn't because his health wouldn't have allowed him to. He was in bad shape. And I think it would have served better for the purpose of justice to send this guy, this older gentleman to a hospital and be on supervision.
Right. And again, Jose and I, we're not hug-a-thug types, man. We're tough on crime and you know, whatever. We're very fair, very just, and again, we're not, you know, those are child abuse images. Person does deserve to be, you know, on a lifetime registry, sex offender registry, etc. And have a good prison term attached to it. But jeepers, you know, that's just one of those things. Anyway, another case that ordinarily wouldn't get First Step Act benefits, but, you know, can receive something under the provisions of the First Step Act. So so interestingly, man, there's going to be just a, now I know, you know, and I know where it says available at every Bureau institution, that ain't the case right now. It maybe will be available at every BOP institution, but some of these, I just don't think some of these joints are quite ready for all this. So what are you hearing?
These programs? So, Bruce, yeah. A lot of these programs that say all BOP institutions, I believe they are, because a lot of these programs are self-taught. You know, there are computer-based programs, there are correspondent courses, they're monitored by a mentor in the group, an inmate that has seniority or an inmate that was qualified in the community to kind of oversee some of these programs. Those that require certifications, you know, like that AARP Foundation finances for 50 plus inmates that are older adults. You know, those kind of those are electronic correspondent courses monitored by AARP. You know, some of them Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a meeting every week or every other week or every Tuesdays and Thursdays, you know. So people come to the joint and they monitor that. A lot of the groups for, you know, a lot of the vocational training programs are, some of them are hands-on, some of them are electronic courses, and some of them are a hybrid. Some of them are electronic, and then the practical aspects of it, somebody comes from the street, a contract employee comes and they do it. Some of those programs are throughout a lot of the institutions, Bruce, as you very well know. So when they say all institutions, I believe it, because as we said from the beginning, a lot of these programs were already in place prior to the First Step Act.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, literacy programs, you know, adult basic education, the A program, you know, ABE. High school equivalency diplomas, all those were in all institutions for male and females.
Right. And remember, we had these education programs, and I was in psychology services, and we had, quote, non-residential programming. Remember, we had to offer a shit ton of non-residential programming to inmates.
Right.
And you're right. It's just, a lot of these programs are in this list, and it was just nothing but to keep these guys busy. And they would just stack up certificates in their central file, right?
Yeah.
And then they come to see you at team, and there's all these certificates that they did this and they did that, and we get their training record, you know, and they have all these completion.
Absolutely.
And we'd say, okay, you're programming, right? And that would help with their classification and review, and then help them get, right, a good RRC bed, right?
Absolutely. I remember when I was a case manager, the inmates used to be very proud of showing, you know, their certificates, and bring me copies of their. They kept the originals, and we made copies and put them in the inmate file.
And I feel sorry for these dudes, because, you know, you saw these dudes, right? Some dudes, and I was a car as well, so I can say women too. They've been down 10, 15 years. Shit, their certificate file looked like a central file.
Not only that, Bruce, they had volumes. They had filled up one six-part folder, and then I had to complete another six-part folder. I had to say volume two of two, you know, or volume three of three. This guy who had a lot long, lengthy sentence, who graduated from a high-security penitentiary to a medium to a low, you know, God forbid, they had three and four volumes of documents.
My employee development file wasn't that thick.
Absolutely.
My own employee development file wasn't that thick, man.
Absolutely. So, our own training files were not as thick.
Yeah. I could have got all my pay stubs in there, man. Back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
my pay period, man.
Absolutely. You know,
my time and attendance file, man. My TNA file, man.
Yeah, time and attendance. So a lot of these inmates were very proud of their accomplishments, and when their families, when their families got the CDs, and when they graduated in some of these programs, I remember we had graduating ceremonies, and their families came in and they took pictures with their families. They were very proud of their accomplishments.
Yeah, man, we had the photo tickets, and the guys would desperately try to hide their gang signs. Yeah, man. On bended knee with the white, you know, go ahead and press your shorts, white shorts. Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
Get the do-rag out. God, dog, I miss them days. But, okay, on a more serious note, folks, me and Jose are going down memory lane here. We love what we do, man. It was we're institutionalized as well, man. We love the BOP. We devoted our lives to BOP, and now we get to do it in a fun way, working with the community. But this is just going to be something that we're all going to learn together. This First Step Act is going to be quite a maze of one, activities and programs, and then two, subsequent team and program reviews. You know, even if somebody's deemed not eligible on the first set of pattern, they may be able to score down with 5 or 10 years of good conduct time and score down from a USP to a medium to a low. And that could make the difference there. Remember, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And so a lot of families, I think, are going to need our services and wisdom and understanding. You know, we can't give them necessarily the patience on how to do that. And I just, you know, I thank God that I know a little bit about case management, but I thank God for you, Jose, who knows a crap ton about correctional programs and case management to be able to assist these clients that we're going to have here in the new future.
Well, I'm really glad that, you know, that some folks come and reach out, Bruce, and of course it involves, you know, a fee, but for the time we invest in this. But I think it's a good thing that we are able to assist individuals navigate through this whole implementation of the First Step Act, because it's work in progress. You know, DOJ is making adjustments and doing revisions to their policies and to the pattern system and to the recidivism programming and to the productive activity list. So it's continuum. It's continued work in progress. And families are going to need, honestly, to have somebody that could coach them and assist them and interpret from them, what does this mean?
And this is something that an attorney is not going to be able to get you the information. Attorney isn't going to call the case manager and say, oh, so let me know what my client has coming in terms of their... No, man, that ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen.
Right.
So it's going to take somebody. And the good news with us is that we know where to ask the questions to get the answers very quickly on how it works from the horse's mouth, not inmic.com, not some BS rumor, not some overinflated hotshot attorney who thinks that they have an in with the has an in with the BOP or whatever. That doesn't make sense. I got somebody telling me right now that they're going to have an attorney tell the judge to get this guy First Step Act credits. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Judge ain't going to say shit to the BOP. You know what I mean? So
Bruce, and I'm glad that you mentioned that. It's not a mathematical formula that you add 2 + 2 = 4. It does not work like that. The needs assessment system includes the screening process of the inmate, and then you apply the assessment, the pattern, the risk assessment instrument to the programs that inmate completed. And then it's up to the unit team to recommend a risk assessment level to that inmate based on a security. For instance, if the inmate is at a medium security facility, well, his risk assessment, guess what, is going to have to be?
Right.
A medium security risk, because if not, it's mismatched level, and then they're going to have to transfer the inmate.
Oh,
either
good.
If
gosh.
His risk is high, or his risk is low, then send them to a low. So interpret that attorneys who are versed or experts in this system could understand a little bit of the point system, but not this application of this situation and the criteria and the flexibility that the unit teams have and the warden has, the discretion.
Exactly. So it's going to be a cluster for a while, because people get security level confused with pattern risk level. Like, oh, well, I'm at Beaumont Low, so I'm low risk. No, you're not. You're an armed bank robber. You know, it's like, oh, right. but I'm at a low. It doesn't matter that you're at a low.
Right. And you're at a low probably by virtue of a management variable.
Right.
Because if you were a pure low, a pure medium, that's where you would be. You know, so there's a difference.
Exactly.
There's different factors that impact that.
So. Yeah. Or a guy has multiple domestic violence charges. Well, they were dismissed. Yeah, but you beat her up. You know, it says you did the conduct. You just didn't get convicted of it. You still have a history of violence. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, dude,
You assaulted the lady, or you assaulted a family member, but they didn't want to testify against you. So the charges were dismissed. But somebody got beat up. Somebody got assaulted.
Yeah. Right? And the BOP sees it as it is. It happens. So there's your risk factor. Right. So, well, man, we got to wrap it up, brother. Another one down. Boy, we can just talk about this stuff all day. But look, we're getting closer. The First Step Act is continuing to march forward, and it's providing a lot of hope to a lot of families, and it's long overdue, like you said, and we're really proud of the Federal Bureau of Prisons to start quantifying and getting this stuff out there and getting the training of the staff so they can implement these programs and push these people through the system in a timely manner and hopefully get them what they got coming in a timely manner and, of course, by policy, because that's what we were taught, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, folks. If you have any questions, come by our First Step Act Federal Prison Reform page. We have a First Step Act YouTube channel. And, of course, all the activities are centrally located at federalprisonauthority.com. And myself and the great Jose Santana on the other line, more so Mr. Santana, will be there to answer all the cops. I'm teasing, man. I'm pretty sharp when it comes to stuff too. But certainly between the two of us, we can answer any question you may have about the First Step Act and federal prison reform. This is what we do. It's what we do for livelihood now, coaching and consulting, and we're glad to do it. So, Jose, thanks for coming on the show. We'll see.
I appreciate it, Bruce. The opportunity. Honestly, we didn't even scratch the surface.
We never do. So next time we have a lull in the schedule, you know how it is, brother. You'll get the fire department call like you got today.
I'm glad to do it.
Oh, man. Well, thanks for being with us. So, folks, there's another great Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio today. And we're going to have a special guest tomorrow. Totally different feel tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but next week. We have a great guest out of Houston, Texas, talking about her foundation and how it helps children with special diseases. So we'll take a whole nother direction next week. So be with us then. Come to our Instagram, The Concierge Coaches, The Concierge Coaches on LinkedIn, Instagram. Justin can be reached at nimmergood.com. And of course, I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. So until then, have a blessed week, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Goodbye, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.